차셔너 이것의 Avram, Chama Yibureyu, Mi Yichye, Umi Yomus, Mi Yehoshaya, Umi Yehoni, Mi Yishofein, Umi Yaron. Uchuva
Well, as we hear Mordechai ben David getting us ready for the forthcoming holidays, he's joined by the Montreal Yeshiva Boys Choir. This is from a 1993 CD. Mordechai ben David sings V'chol Ma'aminim, songs for Yomim Yorayim. And we'll hear more from this album in the future. Wanted to note that for this first hour, we're continuing with interviews of leading cantors and impresarios involved with Chazanis. And I'm so pleased that we'll be featuring Chazan Benjamin Muller, cantor Chazan Gideon Zellemar Meyer, and I'm very excited for you to hear the interview with cantor David Babinet. So let's get right to the interviews. Okay. Okay, I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone cantor Benjamin Muller from Antwerp, Belgium. Shalom, Benjamin. How are you?
Hello, Baruch Hashem. Fine. How are you?
Okay, okay.
Before you start the interview, I'd just like to tell you that I've got great respect for what you do, because I know you don't do it for profit, and really you do it by ideal, and you did many, many things that nobody knows, and you're not looking for COVID, you're always behind the scenes, and this I really admire. I just said today, I spoke with Dr. Sholem Caleb, probably you know him.
Yes, of course, in Baltimore, yeah. Yes.
So he also, I've got a great admiration, he does a fantastic job in preserving the Nusach. I mean, he spent hundreds and hundreds of hours and days to interview old Chazonim, you know, to be able to record the real Nusach, and he put already four volumes, and now he's going to put it on weekdays, and now he's going to put on Shabbos. So I also admire him very much, because I thought that he has sponsors, and he's putting out the money from his pocket, and really, if I may, I don't know, maybe it's a chutzpah for me, but I would like to appeal through this interview to Chazonim to support him. I'm going to support him the way I can, and I think that everybody should support it, because today, nowadays, the Nusach HaTfilah has become very, very, I mean, people forget it. If you go into a shul, which normally you would hear about Tfilah, say the Nusach, and they don't know from their hands and their head. And really, it needs to be put on record and on books, you know, that it shouldn't be forgotten.
Well, I would like to say to my listeners that if you are interested in reaching Sean Caleb, you know how to reach me. You're listening to the program, so you know my email and everything. I'll be happy to put you in touch with Sholem if you want to help him on this wonderful project.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, Benjamin, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Geneva, Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
And I was raised there, but as a child already, my father sent me to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, because there was no proper cheder there. So I was 10 years, and when I left home, and I lived there by an uncle, till my bar mitzvah. Then I came back to Geneva to have the bar mitzvah. And then I went again to the yeshiva soon after.
In Israel?
In Israel, uh-huh. Yeah. I was in Ponevich in the yeshiva Ketana, and then in the Mir yeshiva in Yerushalayim.
I see. Zevi's family is also in Geneva, aren't they?
Yeah, they were there. I mean, no, there's nobody left there.
Oh.
My parents lived there, and my brothers and sisters are all in Eretz Yisrael.
I see. So how did you become interested in Chazanut?
That's very funny. When I was a child, learning in Yerushalayim, in the Dushinsky Yeshiva, and I had a friend there, and when there was a bar mitzvah in our class, he used to sing Chazanut. He had really a nice Chazonish Emol, like you say, and he had coloratura. And we used to walk home together because we lived in the same area.
Uh-huh.
So he sang, I remember, the Value de Avotecho of Sholem Katz. And he started there the coloratura in Rabbein Yaakov Ephraim. And I copied it, I made it. So he stopped and he looked at me. But you know, and I was amazed myself. I never dreamed that I'm able to be a chazan. This was my first acquaintance with chazonis, but it really didn't make me think that I'll be a chazan. It just then I realized that maybe I've got a certain talent.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, we didn't have a record player. I don't know why. My father was quite he had panos and everything, but we didn't have a record player, and I never heard chazonis at home. But when I came back for my bar mitzvah for my sister, I studied with somebody for my bar mitzvah, you know, the drosher, and after we learned, he let me always listen to the recordings. And he had the first recording of Yossel Rosenblatt, Lekai Neshomo Yoevder, Abet Mishomayim, and other things. And I fell in love with Chazonis.
Uh-huh.
And I started to listen all day to this Chazonis. And then I had a friend. And I was about 14 years old. I had a friend who went from South America, so I begged him, send me all the records from Yossel that you can find. And he sent me about 6-7 records. It was for me, Ayontef. And then really absorbed those pieces. I learned them. And so, but I still never thought to be a chazan. Till much later, I listened to chazones then already. Many chazonim. I loved Yeshua Vidim especially, and Yossel. And then suddenly, when my brother, older brother, got married, I was about 19 years old. I had a record player, and I bought in a shop in Eretz Yisrael the Yeshua Vida record where he sings Ono Bechoyach and those things.
Mm-hmm.
And his davening was so warm and so Ishtapchus HaNefesh that really I wanted to daven myself. And that's how it happened, but I never became a chazan that time. I was still in the yeshiva. And my first job actually was Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and the story was like this. I studied in the yeshiva, which is I went for 6 months in a yeshiva in Ashkelon, which was a new yeshiva. They asked me to come, you know, for me, a yeshiva, to come there a bit to reinforce it. And by Shalashudis, I used to sing, you know, the Shabbos, pieces of chazonis. And once, a Shabbos before, it was in August, I think, something like that, two people were there as guests. They davened there and they each shared it with us. And I sang. After they came, they say that they are the Gaboim in the shul in Ramat Aviv, this is near Tel Aviv, and they're looking for a Baal Shachris. I tell you the truth, I knew a little bit Nusach. I mean, I knew Nusach from we had wonderful ballet fillers in Geneva, but really to be a chazan, I didn't know how. And so they said, they wanted me. But so I said, I knew already that Chazan davens only Musaf, not Shachris. So I said, I want to daven Musaf.
Uh-huh.
So they say, no, they have for Musaf, they have somebody, but they'll pay me as much as they pay him for Musaf. So I said, okay. And I went, there was, in Yerushalayim, there was a very well-known teacher of Nusach HaTfilah. It was his name, it was Zalman Polak. I don't know if you heard about him.
No.
He had lost his voice, but he was the teacher of many, many chazonim of Noah, the great chazonim, who learned Nusach by him. He had a very good Nusach. So I went and I bought by for him. I remember it cost me at that time. You know, it's a story of over 50 years ago. And he took 250 Israeli lirot, it was at that time still, for landing me, I had to return it, the tapes, the big reels, you know,
yes,
from the Nusar of Rosh Yom Kippur, and I sat there all day and listened to it, and when I davened there, there was about Phile in the other, they have overflow minion, so he said, I'm coming quickly because you have got such a wonderful Nusar, and it was my first compliment as a cousin. This was my first job, and then I didn't have in mind to take a yearly position, but then I got married two years afterwards.
I got married
in Israel, but it's a girl from, my wife is from Milan, Italy.
Oh.
And I thought, my father was in the watches business, so I thought to go with him in the watches business, but this was a difficult time for the Swiss watches because the Japanese came out with the quartz, you know, and my father's business went very, very down. And he didn't even really have a place for me to work there.
Oh.
So, and my father-in-law loved very much the way I sing, and he pushed me to go and look for a job in America. So I went to the America, to New York, and I didn't find, I was very friendly with Cantor William Goldberg. He was the secretary of the Chazonim Verband in First Avenue.
What year was that about?
Excuse me?
What year would that be about?
This was in 1968.
68, okay.
And I don't know if you know of him, but he was a very nice person. He really helped me. But there was no job. There was not a... I was coming out from the yeshiva. I didn't want, you know, to make compromises with Mechitzes and Meister Geschäften. So I was really... I thought already to go back to Switzerland. But then I got that call, a call from... Because I contacted... Edward Smith.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, so he found me a job in Montreal, Canada, in the Zichron Kedoshim Shul there, and I was there nearly a year, but it was, I don't know, my wife didn't support well the cold and the heat in the summer, the cold in the winter,
mm-hmm.
So at that time I was looking for a job somewhere else, and there was Chazon Shmuel Baruch Taube in Montreal at that time. So I knew that he was in Johannesburg a year before. I asked him, maybe he knows a position there. So he said, I don't know. But next week, there is Avrom Himmelstein, the very well-known conductor,
yes,
composer, who was the conductor in the great synagogue in Johannesburg. He's coming to me. Come to me, Erev Shabbos, and you'll speak to him. So I arrived there, and... Himmelstein, yeah, Shalom Aleichem, yeah. He sat down at the piano, sing me something. So I started to sing the Mimkoim Chomalkeinu of Yeshua Vida.
Ay, ay.
So I just said, just the beginning, the few phrases. He says, it's enough, I have got a job for you. That's funny, that's interesting, you know. And then I was there for less than a year. And then afterwards, I mean, no, I was in Montreal then less than a year.
Yes.
Then I went to South Africa. I was there for 5 years. And then, you know, there became the apartheid, which was very, very bad.
Yes.
And I remember I used to walk from shul to my home. It was about an half an hour walk. And suddenly I saw a black person, which were two white policemen were running after him. And he went into to a garden, you know, of a house. And they went after him and they closed the door. But there was holes, you know, in the wooden fence. And I looked in. He was with the hands lifted up, and they shoot him just cold-bloodedly.
Oh.
This, I couldn't take it. I came home, I was sick. I said to my wife, Bila, my wife's name is Bila, we are going away from here. I don't care. So then, you know, the Dashgokha, how it goes, it's unbelievable.
Yes.
So I had to go every year to Switzerland because I didn't have really a national passport. I had a UN passport, which had to be renewed in the play in Geneva, not in South Africa. I couldn't do it in the embassy. So I went there. So I thought I bought already a ticket to New York. And I came to New York, and I was waiting for a friend to pick me up for an hour or two. He was busy, he couldn't come. And suddenly I see Chazon Shlomo Mandel. You heard about Chazon Shlomo Mandel?
Yes, yes. He was in South Africa, wasn't he?
Out of there, you know, yes. The arrivals.
Yes, Mandel.
He was in South Africa.
Yes, yes.
So we kissed each other and I said, Shalom Aleichem, where are you? From where are you coming? He said, from Antwerp. Antwerp, Belgium? Oh, Antwerp, Belgium. And I says, who is Chazon Yeshua Lehrer? He was Chazon at that time. He says, oh, you don't know? He says to me, he left, he went back to Eretz Yisrael. And he looks at me and he says, you know, Binyamin, I think this is a good position for you. I said, why not for you? Because he was also looking for a position. He says, no, it's not for me. He's not looking for this kind of a position. You need one. So then I came back from New York to go to Johannesburg. I stopped in London. And funny enough, my father-in-law was, I told you, from Milan.
Yes.
He had there a restaurant. And this restaurant, they were the diamondiers of Antwerp. They used to come there, you know, to sell the diamonds for the jewelry manufacturers.
Yes.
And there was one guy, and he always heard me sing there in the restaurant, and he says, "Hi, Binyamin, if I would have you in Antwerp, So I tried to contact him. I found finally the number, and I told him, listen, I'm now in London on my way from New York to Johannesburg, and I heard that Chazal Lera left. Is there a possibility for me to come daven Shabbos? Oh, yes, sure. He was very happy. Call me back in an hour. In an hour, I called back, and he said, it's arranged, you're coming for Shabbos. And so I davened Shabbos, and I took the position.
Ah.
So I'm here already over 40 years.
40 years. Oh, they went by very quickly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so tell us about your congregation.
My congregation is a very nice congregation. You know, it's one of the few, I think, in the world that still crave after the original tefillah, original nusach. I mean, I'm singing other things as well. I mean,
yes.
We cannot sing only chazones. But they love chazones, they love tefillah. They grew up on it. First, they were here, Moshe LeKraus, like in 1955. And then they had the other chazonim. Eshel was here, I think.
Oh, really? Yitzhak Eshel?
Yitzhak Eshel was here for a year, I think.
Uh-huh.
And then was Chazon Lera for 15 years.
I see.
And then I came. So they have a long tradition. Even though that it's already a new generation, they grew up on this. And they love it. And thank God. We have a choir every Shabbos.
Now you have sons who are also in the choir.
I
have a wonderful record that you have with all three of them.
The Miller family.
Yes,
this was a concert which was organized in Tel Aviv in the Man Auditorium.
Tarbut,
and we had so we recorded it live, and that's how we made the record.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Great. And of course, I close my eyes and I remember your Rachem Noah when we had the concert. And you were so outstanding there. It was.
Thank you.
Yes. So the shul appreciates Chazonis, which is wonderful.
Yeah. Baruch Hashem.
How's the situation in Antwerp?
It's about, you see, anti-Semitism, there's no more and no less, I think, and then when I came here 40 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is another problem. There's no parnose. Diamond business were taken over by Indians, and it's very, very, you know, the world financially is in crisis.
Yes.
Since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really recover. And, you know, the first thing to suffer is diamonds, because people nowadays are not buying diamonds. They're buying iPods with iPhones and all the
stuff. Yes. Are any of your boys becoming chazanim?
Yeah. I've got two boys. One boy is his cousin in Brussels. His name is Yisrael Miller, and he's actually the chief chazan of Europe, because his synagogue in Brussels, which is the capital of Europe, was consecrated as the synagogue of Europe. So he is the chief chazan of Europe.
Where is that? In Brussels.
In Brussels. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the great synagogue in Brussels. And I've got another son who is in Manchester. He's the oldest one, Yossi Müller.
Yes.
And he is his cousin there in Whitefield. And I have another cousin, Rafael Chaim, also a cousin. But he's more, you know, going down in Shabbosim, Rosh Yom Kippur, and, you know, so he doesn't have a fixed job. It's also very good with Baruch Hashem, they're davening all.
Interesting. So, what's your feeling about the Chazanis, the future?
If you are going to keep on doing your fantastic work, I think it's going to survive.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, because it needs a revival.
Yes.
The problem is that, I think the problem is double. I don't think that the whole culpability is on the shuls, I think the Chazonim are also not the way they used to be. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Okay.
I was a youngster. There was a Chazon in Lausanne in Switzerland, which is about 80 kilometers from Geneva. And he was a good Chazon. He was not one of the greatest, but he was a good Chazon. And he was a pupil of Kvartin, of Zambel Kvartin. And I wanted to meet him to hear a bit, you know, about the Chazonim. This is a story of over 50 years ago.
Yes.
And I went to Lausanne and I met him. So I told him, what can you tell me about Zavel Kvartin? So he said, you know, Zavel Kvartin, when he remembers, he was in the shul. Zavel Kvartin started Yom Kippur, his Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, it's a Sefer Terde, very well known. He said he started it at the Aron Kodesh. When he finished it, he was in the other side of the shul. He was so taken by it that he didn't even feel that he's walking away.
Interesting.
So this is the sort of davening, this is the sort of feeling that the Chazonim did put at that time. I'm telling you, I mean, today the Chazonim are trying to please the congregations. And the congregations, they feel that the Chazonim, they don't daven with such a, you know, such a spilus, such a... really with all their hearts.
Yes.
I remember I asked... the first time I heard Shlomo Mandel in Johannesburg, it was difficult for me because I had to daven every Shabbos. So I went Sunday, he had a wedding in his shul, so I went to listen. And I came outside, I heard him sing. And I thought by myself, this is a chazan not from nowadays, this is a chazan from past generations. And I told him this afterwards, what I heard. So he says, yes, I'm trying to daven like the daven then. And I said, what's the problem that the Chazonim nowadays, they don't daven like this? So he said in Yiddish, they davenen ohne Überzeugung. I didn't know, he means without conviction. I didn't know what it means. What are they not convinced? But I think that he meant to say without attractions. No, how do you say it in English? Without... you know, putting their hearts. That's
yes.
What I mean,
the neshama. The neshama wasn't there.
The neshama.
Yes.
And that's what it's like. People that Chazonim are trying to show up. Not all of them. Sure, they're great Chazonim. I'm not talking about the great Chazonim. I'm talking about the Chazonim that you know, they take jobs.
Yes.
And the problem is they don't even realize. I was invited a few times when I was in Eretz Yisrael. Eli Yaffe always invites me to come and give a master class, you know, in a school of Chazonim.
Yes.
So the custom is that the Chazon gives a, you know, a lecture, and then he sings some pieces. And I could see, I prepared very well, and I compared Chazones, and I tried to explain, and I saw that they really are not really there. At the end, they were waiting that I should sing a piece. I mean, this was... So even the pupils of Chazonis, they're not interested. They're interested to get a position, to show their voice, and that's it.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, not long ago, I heard on YouTube a recording of Moshe Genshov. He must have been very, very old at that time already. And he sings Akavyo ben Mahalalel. He's Akavyo ben Mahalalel. Not Yosele, not Moshe Kosovitsky, it's Israel Alter. He sings this Akavim and Mala. I was curious. I'm telling you, this is a fantastic piece, one of the most beautiful pieces of Moshe Genshov. And I love this piece, and I learned it. So when they asked me to, when Eli Yaffe asked me then to sing something, I sang this. And I asked the pupils, what do you think about this piece? So they, one or two, I don't know really what Moshe Genshov wanted with this piece. So I said, this is your trouble. You don't even know anymore what means Pirush HaMilos. You don't know anymore what means Tefillah. So the same Chazan, I saw that he's got a little chutzpah. So I asked him, tell me how you say Shoichenad. So he said, you show me. I say, I'm saying Shoichenad in Shul. You show me and I'll tell you what's wrong. So he started... I said, this is a song, this is not a tefillah.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Well, listen, it's what I find of interest is that Naftali and Ellie have students, and there are some with good voices. They're still, it seems to be a group of young people who want to become chazanim, but
that there are a lot, and I think that the revival of chazanim may come from the youth, mm-hmm. not from the people of our generation. I think the youth, because they are craving after some real value, not just, you know, they are always the same singing, the same Karlebach. I like Karlebach. I sing Karlebach pieces. But when you make a Nusach Karlebach, you make the old tefillah Karlebach, this right. is not a tefillah.
Interesting.
You can put Karlebach pieces, but not call it Nusach Karlebach. You know, what they sing, all of them, you know, Kabbalah Shabbos.
Sure.
Aboim Shono.
Sure.
You know from where this is? On the rivers of Babylon. This is not even a Yiddish tefillah.
Right. Well, you know, if I may, I don't want to interject, but a couple of weeks ago I was at your nephew's shul, Zevi's shul at Westside Institutional, yeah. and he had a gathering of a dozen young Lubavitch Hasidim, and it's called the Council of Chabad Chazonim. And I was so excited that I thought to myself, if this catches hold, and I mean, it could be a revolution. So, you know, I don't know how things develop. I just know they start with an idea, and then all of a sudden it catches.
Yeah, but the main thing that they should go after the original Chazonis, not to modernize and not to make it songs, you know.
No. They have a voice, a vocal teacher who is teaching them Nusach, and it's not going to be Nikun. Look, it just started, and
Did you hear something interesting there?
Yes. They didn't sing original, but they were singing Chazonis pieces at this event. And look, it's just the beginning. They're young, a couple of very good voices. Anyway, I didn't mean to digress, but when you said it's going to come from the young people, yes, yeah, I'm very excited. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
So, some closing thoughts.
Excuse me?
So before we close,
yes,
do you have some other thoughts to share?
I think that the Chazonim should really try to give their neshama. They can sing melodies, even Hasidic melodies. It depends how you sing it. If you sing it just like a hopke, it won't bring back the Chazonis. But if you sing it with the neshama, this is going maybe to be the revival of Chazonis.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, Binyamin. And when you come here to the States, I look forward to seeing you. And I've never been to Antwerp. I really have to come in.
So you're invited.
Thank you so much. Anyway, all the best. And
when is it going to be broadcasted?
Next week. I'll email you. It's on my website, so you can listen anytime.
Please email me as well.
I'll send it to you. Yes.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All the best and a good year. Amen.
Same to you. Shalom. Okay. That, as you heard, was Cantor Binyamin Muller, and you heard me mentioning the Chabad, the organization of Council of Chabad Chazonim. So let's go to this interview with David Babinet, who is the voice Chazan, who is the voice teacher for the group, and we'll hear more about this. Okay, pleased to have with me on the phone cantor and vocal coach David Babinet. We're going to be discussing something it's very exciting for me, but before we get to the exciting part, shalom, David. How are you?
Shalom. How are you? I'm doing great, Baruch Hashem.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. First of all, tell us a little about yourself, where you were born and raised, and how you got involved with Chazonis.
So I grew up, I was born in the Upper East Side, but I didn't really grow up there. I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I had very little Yiddish kites in my upbringing. I lived there until my teens, and I moved to Colorado. And in Colorado, I was into sports, and I had an accident rock climbing, which put me on my on my tush for a while, and it was just I broke an ankle, but I couldn't really do anything for a little while, and I got this obsession with getting in the school play, and from the school play I wanted to do the musical, and the musical I felt like I needed to train my voice. The voice training took off into a degree studying at UCU. Doing my bachelor's there.
CU, University of Cincinnati?
No, it's the University of Colorado.
University of Colorado, uh-huh.
Then I did my master's in Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
And I did the post-master's, called the artist diploma. I didn't finish it, but I did part of an artist diploma. Then worked at the Portland Opera, LA Opera, several opera companies around the U.S., and went to Italy several times. Performing there, and when I went to Israel to study with there's a program called the IVAI, the International Vocal Arts Institute. It's
what year was that?
That was like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That's I guess 2005 around.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's a program in Tel Aviv, and it's run by Joan Dornemann. It was run by her. Somebody else took it over recently. But it was like a really elite training program for young Chazanim, but not young opera singers. And my first time to Israel. And I was blown away by the Jewish culture in just like at first glance. That was like, it was just like the culture and the richness of the Jewish people that I had totally not been exposed to ever. And I went to a synagogue maybe 2-3 times in my life, and I just had a real hunger to connect with Judaism. And I met a rabbi, a Chabad rabbi in LA, who gave me a Rosenblatt CD, like the greatest hits, Yaakov Rosenblatt.
Oh, what rabbi was that?
His name is Simcha Bachman,
uh-huh.
Glendale,
okay.
Outside of L.A., near where uh-huh. I was living. And I had no idea what Chabad was. I just heard of Orthodox, conservative, and reformed. And I thought Orthodox would probably be too strict, but he totally evaded the question, and he just said, "We're friendly Jews. Come on over and meet us." So, they were very friendly, and he gave me this CD, and I was blown away, because opera is very beautiful, but, I know what operas are, I always have known what operas are about, and they're not the most inspiring. I mean, the story, sometimes, if you ever get a translation of the words, sometimes it's very kind of ridiculous, what the words are singing about. So, just having something like it's like much more like actually something of substance there. So that was the first time I went to Israel. I went back and did the program again the following year, and I was already this was back in Tel Aviv, and I was already kind of half. I was getting into Yiddishkeit, observing Shabbos and Kashrus and. And, I went to, I ended up going to yeshiva for a few years and keeping up with my voice lessons.
In Israel?
I studied in Seagate, in the yeshiva and Seagate for Baal Tshuvas.
Uh-huh.
And, it's a really nice place to learn because, it was kind of secluded, quiet, and great rabbis. The yeshiva just went, it kind of closed recently.
Oh.
But it was a great yeshiva. And And then I got married, and as far as my profession, I just did whatever I could do to make money, which was teaching voice lessons, and that's basically been my shlichus, if you want to call it. I'm here to train all the chazanim in Crown Heights and beyond, and prepare them for the high holidays, and everything, you know, because some very talented chazanim here. I'm very honored to work with them all.
Well, just recently, I had the pleasure of hearing from this group, and to my listeners, you might as well get used to hearing this. The name of this organization, it's the Council of Chabad Chazanim. Okay, got that? The Council of Chabad Chazanim. And this was at the Westside Institutional together with Zevi Miller, and there were about a dozen young cantors, would-be cantors, who have been trained by David. And I was so taken by the potential and the talent that I heard that evening, David, I'm just so excited. I think it could be the beginning of an incredible revolution.
It's very exciting too. We created this out of nothing. You know, Lefty Kaplan started this council 10 years ago, and I asked him to help me get established as a voice teacher, and he said, you know, he already had a voice teacher, so he didn't want to, like, say, like, he suggests me, because he already had somebody to see the studying with.
Uh-huh.
He said, let's make a group where people can learn together and meet together and sing for each other. So we started meeting in people's homes, and we were doing it about once a month, every month or two, and just having these kumzitzes where people sing chazanis mostly. And out of that evolved a sphere concert we just did. A nice, sold-out, small shul in Crown Heights. And we were very, very encouraged by that. And then Zevi Muller wanted to do an event with us, which we were very excited. Everybody was really excited about that. And now more and more people are asking us to join them for an event. So it's very exciting.
This movement of Chazanis among the Lubavitch is new.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, it's not considered the pinnacle of service of Hashem. Chazanis, like a Hasidic nigun, is actually considered the highest level of musical expression, from our perspective. But, you know, there are definitely a lot of people in the Chabad who appreciate it. I think, you know, the Chabad houses around the world, they might have more of it, but usually they can't afford to bring, you know, they only have a huge budget for a housing, unfortunately. But some of them are getting more wealthy, and so they can, and people want that, so. Usually for the high holidays, some of them spring for a good chazan, but in general, it's not so common.
Well, even if they bring a chazan in once every few months, or even, you know, a couple times a year, I mean, if there's a couple thousand Chabad houses, they could keep a lot of young cantors rather busy, I feel. And it would... to me, it's the potential is incredible, because you've got the people who believe the words singing the words, and you know, you've got Gerer, and you've got Satmer, and you've got Bells. So why don't we have Lubavitch?
That's right, absolutely. It's about time, and 'cause like you said, we learned so much about the words and the meaning, inner meaning of the words. Who is Hashem? Who is Hashem to me? And we do really relate to the service of tefillah, but why don't we have chazanis yet? So where I come in with education, because I feel there's a big lack of education in different aspects of the Chazanist education, which is a very challenging skill and art to master. But vocally, on one hand, and Nusach, on the other hand, and also having opportunity to meet with other Chazanim in a master class, a performance class environment, to share your work with each other, that is really something that we've achieved, and it's something which I hope that more Chazanim and more other enthusiasts of Chazanim will come out to appreciate our gatherings, because that was something I had in my music education. We used to meet every week for master class with our teacher, and sometimes with more celebrity singers, you know, who would come and teach a master class. But the education is of utmost importance, and so there's the vocal aspect, you know.
Yes, yes, and by the way, we have to educate the congregants also. I mean, it's educate those who are addressing them, but those who are listening, they have to understand. And I think it is exposure. A lot of them have never been exposed to, like you heard that Rosenblatt CD, and it turned you on. How many of these young Chabadniks or Jews in general have never really heard the real thing, you know? And not everyone's going to be turned on. Not everybody loves the opera, but there are those who will, if they're educated, will appreciate it.
Well, I think there's two things about that I would like to say. That
sure.
One is people, in general, if they have a little bit of vocal education, a little bit of Nusach education, so that they, not that they're going to be a professional, but it used to be that people would just have it was considered normal part of any person's education to have a few years of music. And what that does is that raises the bar for professionals. Professionals now have an audience of amateurs who know something about music, and they can appreciate a real professional.
Mm-hmm.
So but what we have now is that in our communities, not only Chabad, but in many Jewish communities, the study of music is neglected. So the professionals are usually self-taught musicians. They some of them didn't even attend any private lessons.
Uh-huh.
So the other thing, what was the other thing? I don't remember what the other thing was.
Oh,
you saw the fact about educating the audience.
Yes.
One thing that we used to do in the opera, I did it at the Portland Opera, they had it at the LA Opera, every single opera company in the U.S., they do development programs where they do outreach, and they, one year I spent, I must have gone to 100 schools. I also did it at the Opera Colorado in Denver, going around to schools and doing a children's opera, opera for children. And I was touched by this myself. When I was in Greenwich, something came from the Metropolitan Opera to SUNY Purchase, and we had an assembly there, and I heard Papageno's duet with Papagena from The Magic Flute. And I forced my parents to take me to see La Marriage of Figaro at the age of 12 years old. So, you know, I've never heard of anything like that, like a school program. I think it's a great idea.
Yes.
But, you know, the opera companies, the reason opera is around nowadays when there's movies and pop music is because that they're doing something about educating the audience.
Yes.
So there's definitely, we could do a lot about that.
Oh, there's no question. There's the potential is unlimited, and the issues are the challenges are unlimited. But I see this again. I don't want to sound like a broken record. I just am so excited that you've taken the step. And when I heard these young fellas, there were a few that just were so outstanding. There's a bell-shaped curve. You've got people who are going to always be, you know, at the top. There's the middle is, you know, acceptable, and then there's a few that perhaps, you know, they have the the hope, but the voice may not be there. But that's the way it is. I heard a lot of talent the other night, and I'm trying to think out there among the Chabad world, how many hundreds or thousands of young people have such potential, you know, and to be exposed to this.
Yeah, all the Chazanim, we have a wealth of talent, and yeah, people just being exposed to it, it makes a big difference.
Yes. Well, David, I will want to be there for you. I want to work with you, and tell my listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Well, my website, davidbabinet.com. B as in boy, A, B as in boy, I, N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, T as in Tom.com. And also, we just got a new domain, which we're going to turn into an actual website, but now it's just directing to my website, and that's Chabad Chazanim, Chazonim.
Okay.
And you can give me a call, 718-772-3543.
Oh, repeat that again?
718-772-3543. Babinetd@yahoo.com. I'd love to hear if you have any insights for me, if you want to take voice lessons, if you want to help sponsor an event, or if you want to invite us to do an event in your synagogue. However, if you see any opportunities, however any way you'd like to be involved with us, we're asking. We're a grassroots organization. We're just kind of doing whatever we can to further Chazanus and the education of it.
Okay, and to my listeners, if you need more help in getting in touch with David, just get in touch with me, and I'll help you. Listen, I wish you all the best, and upcoming holidays. Let's hope it's a wonderful new year of good health and success, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Charlie. I really appreciate you really being there for us.
Okay.
We really appreciate it.
Okay, shalom. Okay, so you heard Chazan Muller say that perhaps the revival will come from the young, and then you've heard this interview that I just had with cantor David Babinet. And if you'll note on the index, which you obviously see if you're logged on to this, I gave you the information as to how to reach David Babinet. And if you have other thoughts on how to either become involved with or suggestions on how this, it's in its early stages right now, and who knows in what direction it will go. And I just am very excited about it. Okay, let's go on now to the last interview with cantor Gideon Zellermeyer. I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone Gideon Zellermeyer, who is the Chazan at Shar HaShemayim in Montreal. Shalom, Gideon.
Alecha HaShalom. Great to be here.
Okay. I had the pleasure of seeing you recently with Ozzy and Chaim David, I guess it was.
Yeah, that was a wonderful concert. The three of us are great, great friends and almost brothers to each other. So it's always fun for us to get together and sing together.
Yeah, your friendship was quite evident there. So tell us about yourself. Where you were born and raised?
I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, but grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut. And 4 years of university in Washington, D.C., at George Washington University. A couple of years in Manhattan. 2 years based in Jerusalem, but studying at the Tel Aviv Cantorial Institute with Naftali Hershtick and Raymond Goldstein and Chaim Pfeifel and many others. And since 2001, I've been in Montreal.
Oh, it's been that long already. Wow.
It's been that long.
Time flies quickly when you're having a good time.
Yep, it's a great time. It's a great city, and there's a great Jewish community here. There's a lot of cantorial history here. Shar HaShemayim in particular is quite unique. Next year, 2016, in the fall, will be our 170th anniversary.
Yes, wow.
And the synagogue has a full-time men's choir since 1887.
Fantastic.
And, Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. And we've had a long tradition of choral music being part of services here.
Mm-hmm.
The sanctuary is a majestic European style, just under 2,000 seats with lots of wood and stained glass and so on. And it's just very beautiful. The traditions of the synagogue go back to London. So still to this day, the clergy and the balabatim that sit on the bima wear striped pants and morning coats, and balabatim wear top hats.
Oh, really?
And yeah. It's a very formal, very regimented kind of a service. Lots of German-Jewish roots here.
Uh-huh.
But actually, it grew out of it's the second oldest synagogue in Canada. The oldest in Canada is the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in Montreal.
Uh-huh.
And so there are various little Sephardic holdovers of certain traditions as well. The mourners come to the front of the sanctuary to say Kaddish together.
Mm-hmm.
And certain other things, and there are certain Germanic things, like we don't say Brich Shmeh here because the Zohar was too risque, I think, for German Jews. But
can you repeat
really
words?
Special. It's a throwback to a different era, and it's a real privilege for me to be part of a synagogue, a congregation that values preserving the European choral tradition.
Uh-huh.
So we have a mix of music each Shabbat that ranges from the choral standards of Zulzer and Lewandowski and so on, the cantorial Golden Age classics of Yosele and all his like, modern compositions of Meir Finkelstein and Naftali Herzstück and any number of Hasidic compositions. I mean, it really runs the gamut in terms of the last 150 or so years of Jewish music history.
Interesting. I know you've made some great recordings.
Over the last 5 years we released four CDs, but three recordings. The first one was a sort of a greatest hits. The second one is an interesting collection where we decided to show off the fact that we have a multifaceted repertoire where I don't have the pressure of repeating the same music every week.
Uh-huh.
So we recorded 5 different examples of Ein Kamocha and 12 different examples of Uvnucho Yomar.
Yes.
The third is a two-disc set of all music of Yamin Noraim, timely for this time of year.
Yes. Do they let you repeat words?
Yes, they do.
Uh-huh.
I don't do it gratuitously. I mean, my teachers, certainly if anyone who heard Naftali Herzstück daven at the Great Synagogue, he never used to repeat words gratuitously.
Uh-huh.
I try not to do it just with frivolity, but yes, they do let us repeat words.
Well, I think it's fascinating the commitment that the shul has made to music, and to Chazanut. It's unique.
It is unique. It really... I'm hard-pressed to think of where else it exists. You know, unfortunately, we live in an age of attrition when it comes to serious music in synagogues, and thankfully I seem to have found myself an oasis. Certainly a lot of that was established by the longtime music director here, Stephen Glass, with whom I made all of the recordings, and it's a tradition that's being continued by his successor, Roi Azulai, who has just finished his first full year with us from Israel. And actually, he came to us from a choral tradition. He was the director of the choir at the synagogue in Strasbourg, which was where Naumburg was the music director years ago. And so he also came from a place that valued a strong choral tradition. So it was a natural fit for him to come here and join our staff.
Is this Azulai someone who has recorded? I have quite a few recordings from...
He's a conductor. He's
uh-huh.
conducted quite a number of cantorial concerts with Israeli orchestras and choirs, and certainly most of the best known of my colleagues he's worked with. And we were lucky to snatch him and make his home here in Montreal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How does one get into the choir?
By audition. The choir is, people ask me, is the choir professional? The choir is professional by virtue of the fact that they're paid. For many of them, music is an avocation rather than a vocation, though there are a number of, for instance, in Jerusalem when I was singing in the Great Synagogue Choir, there would always be a sort of a regular rotation of cantorial students that would be coming through Jerusalem on their year that they spend in Jerusalem as part of their cantorial programs. So we have a certain rotation of McGill music students that come in and out, but our choir is all Jewish, and everybody's auditioned, and musically, it's on a very high level, and you know, I have to say, with great pride, we do a tremendous amount of music over Yamin Noraim. We have close to 40 separate compositions in our repertoire just for Slichot.
Wow.
And every service is just chock full of music. Musaf on Rosh Hashanah is just a parade of hits of all the great repertoire from compositions that are indigenous to Shaar Shamayim that were written by music directors here over the years to master choral works, like I mentioned before, of Lewandowski, Zulzer, Naumburg, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Cantorial classics of Yossel and Kvartin and certain things from the British tradition of Samuel Alman. I mean, you could just find everything. It's really quite a potpourri and a eclectic but effective mix of different genres and different ages and different times of composition, different places. It's really quite remarkable.
Do you have an assistant cantor?
There's a Chazan Sheni / ritual director who takes care of laning and things like that. And we'll daven when I'm not in town. But yes, so to answer your question, yes.
Uh-huh. We were in Montreal a year or so ago, and I stopped in your shul, and I was... I got a grand tour. I forgot who it was, the director. I think he was from the States. But it was just an awesome place. Really,
yeah, it's quite a plant. You know, it's basically a full block. And it's also in a really beautiful part of the city that is immediately adjacent to downtown. The building itself, the sanctuary, was built in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
And the building had an addition that was added in 1967, which enlarged the size of the balcony a bit and also created some more social hall spaces and things like that. But this is actually the third location that the synagogue has. The first two were various points downtown Montreal, which are no longer, those buildings are not standing anymore, but there is pictorial evidence of it. And, you know, with 170 years of history, the synagogue has done a really remarkable job of cataloging that and documenting it. So there's a museum that you can see at the shul with pictures and different ephemera from different points in our history. If you walk down the large staircase from the sanctuary level to the social hall level, you'll pass by two of our past presidents, Lazarus and Lion Cohen, who respectively were Leonard Cohen's grandfather and great-grandfather. We have lots of interesting Montreal roots that people that had their B'nai Mitzvah at the Shaar and are part of the Shaar lore. So,
there was a story we were told about Chagall.
Yes, it's an awful story. But in 1967, when they built the, so you told the punchline already.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
In 1967, when they built the Daily Chapel, which is a you know, our daily chapel is somehow the size of a lot of shuls.
Yes.
It seats just about 300. And not that we have 300 people at every minyan, halabai.
Right.
But they commissioned an artist to make stained glass windows, and as the date to the installation drew near, they asked the artist to see proofs, and the artist said, I don't do proofs. You commission me, you pay me, and we install the work. And the synagogue insisted on seeing proofs, so Chagall sent the windows to Hadassah instead of having them in our chapel. It's a terrible story.
Oh, yeah. A while back, there seemed to be a migration from Montreal to Toronto. What was the situation? Is the situation in Montreal and the French quiet at the moment?
I don't know that it's ever completely quiet. I mean, if you can open the newspaper here most any day and you'll see some kind of a story about an English-French tension over something, whether it's a parking sign or an awning over a shop that doesn't have the appropriate size difference between English and French lettering. Look, I'm an American. I've lived here for 14 years, and embarrassingly, I don't speak French. But I married a Montreal girl, and she speaks French.
Oh, that helps.
And my kids, at this point, speak French better than I do. that having been said, so yes, it's quiet. It's certainly not an active volcano, let's say.
Uh-huh.
It's always there. We did lose a generation or so of really good people to Toronto. Probably about 25, 30 years ago, I would say that Montreal's Jewish community was about 120,000, and Montreal's was about 90, and I think those numbers have flip-flopped, and we're about 90, and they're over 120.
I see.
They might even be even larger.
I see.
But what can I tell you? I mean, I think that Montreal is a wonderful city. It has a lot to offer. It also has a tremendous, I mean, it's interesting, like a lot of cities go through phases of where the Jewish community initially arrives and then where it migrates to and then what happens in that area. So there's an area that's called the Main or the Plateau that is along St. Lawrence Boulevard, which is a major north-south artery that cuts across the city. And that's an area where the Jews initially arrived here probably 100 years ago. And eventually they moved west towards the suburbs, and Westmount is where my synagogue is, which is one of the first of them, but now there's big Jewish suburbs of Côte Saint-Luc and Hampstead where the Jewish concentration is up over 90%.
Wow.
In the meantime, what filled in a lot of that area in Outremont is there's a huge Hasidic community there. Of all stripes, if you pardon the expression. I mean, you have a Bell's yeshiva, you have a Lubavitch yeshiva, you have Skver, you have any number of different Hasidic groups that are there and have very active and vibrant communities. There's lots of kosher dining in the city. It's easy to buy kosher food in the city. You have aficionados of cholent who go around and rate the cholent from the different places that you can buy it from. It's really fascinating that way. So there's lots of Jewish color in Montreal, and of course we have a growing Sephardic population, which has been over the last 25 years because it's easy for Moroccan Jews and so on to come in and be able to get along immediately speaking French here, and certainly we've seen a rise of an influx of French Jews as well in the last number of years as they have gone through the well-documented misfortunes of the French Jewish community.
Yes.
It's a community with a lot of international flavor. It's really a fun place to live.
Great. Gideon, where do you see Chazanis going?
Where do I see Chazanis going? Look, my answer is probably colored by the fact that I live in a place where it seems to be doing pretty well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's hard times for a lot of my colleagues and a lot of the communities that they serve. And I think that it probably means that Chazanis is going through a period of adaptation where the standard or what would have been a standard virtuosic chazan of a certain era who can just stand up and give pieces and things like that doesn't really fly anymore, partly because congregants aren't looking for that. They might be looking for something that's more participatory, partly because congregants don't necessarily understand it, as we see an attrition of really knowledgeable shulgoers and things like that. I think it's a challenge to the chazan of how you can adapt to a different climate. I know for my community, one of the things that I've come to realize is that being an effective chazan is serving a balanced meal. You can't serve too much savory, and you can't serve too much sweet. You have to do a little bit of both and realize that participation in a service doesn't just mean singing and clapping along, and it also doesn't mean standing and listening and sort of losing yourself in a moment. I think you have to put yourself in the seats yourself, put yourself in the pews, and try to imagine the emotional ebb and flow of a service and say, if you were listening to this, how would you feel about it? I mean, one of the best pieces of advice that Naftali Hirschtick ever gave me when I was a student was to take a recorder, put it on the table, daven, leave it for a couple of days, go back to it and listen to it again dispassionately and say to yourself, do I like the chazan that I'm listening to?
That's interesting.
What do I like? What don't I like?
And it was
a great way for me to discover whether it was things about Hebrew pronunciation, whether it was things about putting commas in the wrong places or accents on the wrong syllables. And that's pretty mundane stuff, but that's important too. And obviously adherence to Nusach is of primary importance, and I think it needs to remain of primary importance, because otherwise what are we doing? But I think that if we can think honestly about what kind of an experience we're giving for our listeners, for our daveners, are we engaging them? Are we challenging them? Are we patronizing them by singing things that are too simple and too silly? Are we going over their heads? I think that it requires a real honest assessment of how well we're doing, and it takes an educated listener to be able to do that. And I also think that, you know, like, again, this winter I was thrilled to be able to have a short 3-month sabbatical, and spent 6 weeks in Yerushalayim, where I studied with my teachers for the first time in close to 15 years, and over the years of doing it week in, week out, we either fall into bad habits or find ourselves stuck like a broken record and can't get our way out of certain things, and it's not good. I have an interesting tradition in my shul that I give a sermon every year on Shabbat Shira.
Oh, really?
And a couple of years ago, I spoke about, and I think I called the topic religious ergonomics. Anybody who knows what ergonomics is, when you buy a desk chair or a computer monitor or so on, they're all made a certain way to fit the geometry of the human body so that when you sit all day and you type all day at your desk, you're not going to hopefully develop carpal tunnel syndrome or a bad neck or a bad back and so on. They're preventing repetitive strain injuries. So how do we as Jews, and especially us as Chazanim, prevent the repetitive strain injuries that can come from being forced, mandated halachically to say the same words every single morning and every single evening and every single Shabbos and every single Yontif? That's a tough challenge for us.
Interesting.
And we have to make those words new and fresh each time we face them and each time we communicate them to people. Otherwise, if we're bored with them, that boredom can't help but be communicated to the people that are davening with us.
For sure.
So I think that's a tremendous challenge for the next generation. I mean, I am part of the next generation. I think that's a tremendous challenge for me and my colleagues, and I hope that we have the koach and the fortitude to be able to meet that challenge.
Well, I certainly appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us, and
my pleasure.
I envy you with your wonderful position that you have there, and have the choir and the shul and the tradition. It's certainly something
it's a tremendous honor
unique,
and a privilege.
Yes. Well, I wish you many, many more years of accomplishment there, and look forward
to it. You keep up the good work that you're doing, too. You do a tremendous service to the community of Chazanut and Jewish music.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, we'll be in touch, and I guess it's not too early to say happy holiday.
It's still summertime.
Okay, take care.
All the best wishes.
Thanks, Gideon. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, hope you enjoyed these three interviews. We have a few more coming up, and I've been getting some good feedback on it. And of course, I'm always open to your suggestions. You know how to reach me at cbjmusic@aol.com. cbjmusic@aol.com. And stay tuned for the second hour of Chazanut.